You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour with your host, Sam Leibowitz.
Good morning, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are here with me today. If you're tuning in and listening, and you might have seen our newsletter, we have a bit of a surprise for you because, unfortunately, Jason Garner is not in studio today. However, we still have quite a wonderful show in store for you and a little bit of a surprise. And, of course, let us get started with our dear friend, Selena Matreya, calling in with her practical spirituality tip of the week. How are you doing today, Selena?
I'm wonderful, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I just really want to thank you again for coming into our Wellness Center Wednesday evening and doing your evening of grace. It was quite a wonderful experience, and I know everybody really enjoyed it. Thank you once again.
Well, thank you for providing that for everybody. We had a great group, didn't we?
Yes, we did. We did.
Very, very fortunate.
Yes. So, what's our tip of the week this week?
Well, Sam, I wanted to talk about manifestation. Because, you know, we all have lots of things that we want to manifest in our world, and I think there's a lot of misconception about manifestation. So is that a good topic for today?
Absolutely.
Okay. So one of what I'd like to do is share a bit of places where people have some misinformation, and that way they'll avoid some traps. So manifestation, as I understand it and as I've experienced it, is all about putting our attention on our intention and then letting go of the outcome, of how it has to look, when it has to appear.
Right.
And what often happens is that when people put their attention on an intention, that attention might look simply like talking about it. And many people just go about talking about what their intentions are, but they fail to put the actions needed behind it. Because especially for those of us on a spiritual path, there's this misconception maybe that we're so spiritually enlightened that we don't need to put effort into things. Or as The Secret was telling us, you can just think your way to success.
Right.
And I think people miss a lot of the steps, even that The Secret was putting forward, that have to be in place in order for something to happen. It's like, you know, you don't go up to a wall wanting to have a nail put in it, holding a hammer in one hand and a nail in another, and say, okay, I'm going to think the nail into the wall. Most of us are not that spiritually attuned. If you are, forgive me, and that's wonderful. Right. You can just not listen to the next 5 minutes. But most of us are not that tuned. You have to take the nail, you have to put it up to the wall, you have to hit it over and over and over with the hammer. And if you live in a pre-war building with plaster walls, as I do in New York, as you might, Sam, it takes quite a lot of effort.
Exactly.
So the information here is that talking, when you have an intention, talking is not enough. In fact, talking can weaken the effort. So keep your intention, keep your energy field quiet, but put in place physical steps where energy and form, that's what practical spirituality talks about. It's about doing things energetically, but physically, and respecting the laws of the physical universe. So put actions into place that enable the manifestation to happen. So you're working energetically, you're working on energetic actions, but you're also working on physical actions.
Right, right.
And you're keeping talking to a minimum.
Right. Yeah, actually, and because I run the Applying the Law of Attraction meetup group, this is something that, you know, I always get new people, like I did this week. New people come to the group and they always think, oh yeah, I know about Law of Attraction, I saw The Secret, I just have to think positive. And I'm like, no, there's a lot more to that.
Right.
And really what the Law of Attraction talks about is lining up your energy to be in alignment with that which you say you want. And then you take action. It's not that the action is not as important as lining up your energy. It is as important, if not more important. But, I mean, what they're saying is just if you line up your energy first, your action will flow much more smoothly. You'll make much more of the right decisions. You'll just naturally go in sort of the right direction, but you still have to take the action. But if you don't take the time to line up your energy first, then you may take a lot of action and you may not yield much results, and it won't be as fruitful. And so that's the point I think that people sort of get confused on. They think, oh, I just have to line up my energy, and then they forget they still have to take the action.
Exactly, and you're absolutely correct that if you're not lining up the energy, and it's not just the energy of your intention, it's the energy of who you are. I have a very dear friend, she's an artist, and she really wants to push her art, and she's done several things throughout the years to do that. But the energy in her life, what the choices she makes in her life are not energetically in alignment with what she needs to do to move her art forward. And so you're absolutely right. You've got to get your energy in place and your energy alignment, and then you need to take the action. And they kind of come hand in hand, but you need to do both. And I find that most people tend to be on one end or the other, but and they're not realizing that, you know, just keep in mind we're energy and form, and there are rules like gravity in physical reality and other physical reality rules. Like every action, for every action, there's a reaction. So we need to put that action in place. But as you say, after that, energy is aligned.
Right, right. Absolutely. It's having that balance. Beautiful. Thank you so much for calling in, Selena. We always appreciate your practical spirituality tips of the week. I know next week you'll be traveling, but we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.
That sounds great, Sam. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ah, well, wonderful. So appreciate her. Let us move now into the main portion of our program. Yes, I know you were all waiting to hear Jason Garner, who unfortunately had a last-minute emergency, but never fear, your conscious consultant did reach out, and we do have quite an interesting fellow in his place. Locke Kelly has a Master's of Divinity. He's a licensed clinical social worker, a graduate of Columbia University and Union Theological Seminary. And my sister went there for 2 years before she moved to Israel. And he was awarded a fellowship to study forms of non-dual meditation in Sri Lanka, India, Nepal back in the early 80s. He studied Buddhism, insight meditation. He's been to Theravada monasteries. Interspiritual contemplative meditations. This guy, he has been all over the world. In addition to being a licensed psychotherapist, he has also been teaching seminars and supervising clinicians on practicing awareness psychotherapy in New York City for the past 25 years. He served on the New York Insight Teachers Council and has also been collaborating with neuroscientists at Yale, University of Penn, and NYU in the study of awareness training and its effects on our well-being. And we have a really a special thank you for Locke filling in today at the very, very last minute. I think this all happened like since midnight last night, right, Locke?
Yes.
So I guess you were supposed to be here today because, of course, there are no mistakes in a perfect universe.
That's right. It's so wonderful to be here. Thank you for asking me. Yes.
So what's a nice Irish boy like you doing studying like non-dual meditation in Sri Lanka? So just out of curiosity before we start, are you a native New Yorker like myself?
I grew up in New Jersey, right next door.
Oh, New Jersey. Yeah. Okay. What town?
In Summit, New Jersey.
Oh, Summit. Sure. Yeah. I know Summit. So come on. Now, how did you get to being like so deep into this stuff?
Well, I guess I could kind of start anywhere, but let me start with something that's very simple that happened while I was in Summit, New Jersey.
Okay.
Which is starting to play sports.
Oh, okay.
So I had dyslexia, a little ADD when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so I would always be working very hard in school. But when I played sports, there was something would happen where I would relax.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I heard on an announcer on a sportscast say, he's got eyes in the back of his head.
Huh.
And I thought to myself, well, let me see if I have eyes in the back of my head. I was very young.
Uh-huh.
And what I did is I turned my awareness around.
Oh.
I had awareness that looks out of our eyes and looks from our thinking self.
Right.
Turn back and open up a kind of panoramic awareness.
Hmm.
And what I found was, that's a state I shift into when I play these different sports. I was quarterback on the football team. I played goalie on the ice hockey team. So particularly when I was a goalie, I had to kind of shift into this relaxed and yet completely connected state. I know today that they call it the flow state.
Right, right, right. And this wasn't something anybody taught you. This just kind of came as an insight, like just instantaneously.
That's right. So it was something that was happening already. Then I realized that I could do it intentionally.
Mm.
And then I became curious because I'd go out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started playing with, and this is what led me to what I do today, is can this shift of awareness and sense of self is really what eventually I felt it to be, happen intentionally? Is there a way not just
to actually guide it and direct it?
Yeah.
Oh. And so what drew you to study abroad? I mean, that's especially back in the early 80s. Not too many people were going to Sri Lanka back then.
Yes. I had, funny this to continue that story about the goalie. I was one of my best friends in the locker room was when I was very young as a freshman. Said, "Well, man, you played such a great game. What happened?" I said, "Oh, you really want to know?" And I kind of told him, and he was like stunned, and he went like, "Huh?"
Yeah.
But apparently, one of the senior captains on the team heard me, and the next week he came in and he gave me Zen and the Art of Archery.
Oh, okay.
So that was one of the early books this field.
Yes, yes, yes. I read Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance back then.
Yes.
But, yeah. Then
so
archery,
Zen and the Art of Archery was the simple little book that was about kind of a a sport, but it also talked about dropping the self.
Right.
And discovering this well-being or this natural, what I call ground of being now.
Right.
Which is, and rather than a thought-based operating system, it's an awareness-based operating system.
Gotcha.
And that made me say, okay, well, maybe this is the direction to look toward the East to find out more about what I'm searching for.
So just out of curiosity, because growing up Irish, I mean, were your parents very Catholic? Or were they making you go to church every Sunday? Or were they pretty liberal? Were they? Like,
I mean, I was in the kumbaya era, you know. So it's like, so my father was more Catholic, and my mother was actually one of the local leaders of the women's movement, and so she was more became a Unitarian.
Oh, okay.
So she was very influential in, you know, kind of be yourself and explore and challenge. So I had a kind of a freedom to be able to explore what was true for me.
So not like many of my friends who are now recovering Catholics, right?
That's right.
Cool. And so when you first went to college, were you a psychology major right away or social work? What was your initial major?
I was actually an English major.
Oh, you were an English major.
Yeah. I looked at psychology and philosophy and found more in poetry what I was looking for.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So it wasn't until you got to graduate school you started to more focus on that stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, great. All right. So we're going to take our first commercial break. And when we come back, we'll dive deep into this area of awareness and what it means and how to apply it to our lives. And of course, if anyone would like to call in and ask a question of Locke or myself, the call-in number is 877-480-4120. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Bonjour, this is Dominique de Kock.
Bonjour, c'est Tamara Zuboff.
Bonjour, c'est Asania Kone.
We are hosting Pardon My French New York City.
Our guests come from all over the world.
From Mali to New Caledonia, from Paris to Quebec.
French is a common language, yet they all come from different cultures, backgrounds or countries.
And their common desire is to make New York their home.
Listen to them share their stories.
Join us at Pardon My French New York City every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Back. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour. My guest this day today is Locke Kelly, a therapist and meditation specialist. I don't know what even to call you. I mean, you're master of divinity. So it says here that you teach a non-sectarian human being lineage. What does that mean?
So what that means is that as I went deeper and studied with different teachers and different traditions, I realized there was something essential in each of them that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And so rather than staying with one religion or one tradition, or rather than throwing them all out, I felt like there's something essential about meditation teaching that is really common to all human beings.
Right.
And so I want to kind of emphasize that. And that's part of why I started working with scientists and in trying to kind of modernize some of this non-dual teaching or meditation teaching and make it available to anybody.
Right, right. Beautiful. Did you ever study TM?
I did.
You did?
Oh, I started with TM.
Oh, you started with TM. Yeah. Wow, okay.
At 16.
At 16?
Yeah.
Wow. and I mean, you're like me. You've been around the block once or twice.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's really been a huge shift in over the last, 20, 30 years and how meditation has become much more, I don't want to say prevalent, but just much more ubiquitous in society these days. Like even, you know, there are churches where they let them meditate in the church and stuff. So it's really a lot has developed around meditation. Right. So how did you come to work with the neuroscientists at the universities?
Well, I started to find that a couple of them came to my teachings. They had heard what I was saying, and some people had said, "You got to check this guy out." And all of a sudden, there they were. Right. And as I started to just talk to them, I realized that some of what they were discovering matched some of the practices that I was developing.
In what way?
So the group of scientists was, there's a group of scientists that are studying mindfulness, mm-hmm. which is the main thing that's being studied, and that's the popular movement today that everyone knows about. But mindfulness, the first group is studying kind of the stress management effects.
Right.
Then there's another group that started to look for what is this opening up of the self? What is this sense when the sense of self disappears? Mm-hmm. What is that experience? That seems to be what most mystics and most advanced meditators are talking about.
Right.
And so I was created some practices that would actually give that direct experience in, you know, 15 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's primarily, I give both the ability to relax the sense of separate self. Mm-hmm. And then next, more importantly, is not just the absence, but the presence of this awareness that is the operating system. And then the third step is that awareness recognizes it's also embodied and has a kind of open-hearted heart wisdom, mental use of the mind.
Right. So, I mean, obviously it started with sports for you and you found some benefit from it. But as you were teaching this and getting much more into meditation, what did you find the benefits were for you personally as you meditated more and more and learned more about this?
Yeah, I started to be able to intentionally shift out of this, you know, what most of us know, which is kind of this chattering mind.
Right.
So the sense of self that, on one level, is automatic thinking is what we talk about, which is often dealt with in cognitive therapy. It's these thoughts that are happening by themselves. I recognized that I could actually shift to the background of that, and they move to the background as awareness moves to the foreground. And then the second level, which is this sense of self that's always craving for something outside itself, trying to satisfy who it is or what it is, looking to be okay, I realized that that, through this work with the scientists, is actually a co-opting of the physical system of our body, so that the ego identification is created on top of ego functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sense of self, once it realizes that it's not a real physical entity, it no longer craves anything and it can live in the now.
So able to be much more present.
Much more present. So the effects were kind of a joyousness, being in the now, being completely aware of everything as it arose and having a background or a ground of being that was accepting and no longer afraid, worry, concern about the future. Okay. Would just drop away.
Yeah. And so you found this for yourself and you were able to teach this to other people.
Yes, that became my interest because it almost springs from that desire is, wow, this is the most amazing shift.
Right.
My whole life is different. How come, if it's natural, why isn't everyone doing it?
I have a theory for that.
Okay, good.
A couple of weeks ago, I had this huge insight one morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that our natural state, if we're uninterfered with, is to grow in spiritual beings, to grow in awareness, and we would naturally do these things. But because of sort of outside societal pressures that get put on us to live up to other people's expectations of us, family obligations, these concepts around fame and money and success that aren't necessarily authentic to us, that those cause like active interference that pull us away from our natural conscious development.
Yes. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that dovetails with, that's the external kind of the persona and the influence of society. And then the internal sense of this mistaken identity, the self, which then tries to be successful or tries to create satisfaction through external pleasing of people or those kind of things. Right. Whereas if we relax, even working with people in clinics who were, you know, had a major diagnosis, they could discover their ground of being as an essential okayness with who they are now.
Right.
And that wouldn't change, you know, all of the external issues they'd still have to deal with.
Right.
But there's a certain sense of well-being that then doesn't need to please anyone.
Right.
And actually,
then they can show up and be more authentic.
Exactly.
And oftentimes actually creates more success for
exactly.
them. You know, the big example everyone talks about now is Steve Jobs, right?
Yes.
He meditated every single day.
That's right.
You don't get that much more success, a little bit more successful, but not that much more successful than Steve Jobs was.
Right.
And so what did you find in working with the neuroscientists, sort of like on the physical level, when you're getting into these deep states of meditation?
Yes.
I know I've heard studies in the past about the change of the brain waves and then the lasting effects. But what did you find in the studies you worked with
them? So there's a couple things. I'll talk about one. And so the new instrument, the old instrument was measuring alpha, beta waves, which the new ones is called the fMRI, which are these huge magnets.
Oh.
And they're actually looking at the structure of the brain. They can actually peer in and get a magnetic image.
Oh, really?
Yes, of the brain. So it's a whole new field of looking at what's going on. And so two areas. One area that I first focused on was called the parietal lobe, which is basically the part of our brain that orients us in time and space. And it seems, my hypothesis is that it's on too active. And so we feel like we're separate and solid and we're bounded and we're separate from other people.
Right.
And that what happens is in people, both this one scientist, Andrew Newberg from University of Pennsylvania, studied both Tibetan Buddhists and Franciscan nuns.
Oh, okay.
And he found that what happened is when they're in their sense of union or unity or boundless love, that the right parietal lobe would relax or the intensity would go down. And their experience was of boundlessness, openness, and connection.
Right.
And so there, it's not that the, you know, the brain is creating that, but I think it's restricting that. That's my hypothesis.
Interesting. I'm wondering if that's why, like, I know many people who've done like shamanic journeying with medicine plants, things like ayahuasca and stuff, and they've achieved sort of those same states. I'm wondering if the plant medicine is doing sort of a similar thing, like purposefully softening the parietal lobe in a sense that's not quite as active
and
calming it down to allow other parts of the brain to,
I think
to
that,
kick in.
That kind of thing is absolutely true,
Wow.
So then once I realized that, I realized, okay, so then what is the simplest way to teach people how to open to this boundless sense of awareness, how to open out?
Right.
And so I found this thing I call local awareness, which is able to unhook from thinking, open to space, and then be aware from space, and then include the body. So, and immediately when they tested me, they found that I was able to shift in a moment from active to subtle. So I assume that gave me enough confidence when people would report that, that this was actually changing the functioning of their brain.
I see. And I think I remember in one study they found that, you know, like when these like Tibetan monks would meditate, like their brain waves would kind of like smooth out a bit.
Yes.
And then when they came out of meditation, it would go back to sort of the normal state. But over time, it wouldn't go back as far as it used to. It would
Over
time get smoother and smoother and smoother.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that like sort of as
there's
you do this practice more and more that you're closer and closer to kind of almost being in that state.
That's right. Yeah. And that's the goal. The goal is not to just meditate and come back to an ego-centered life, but actually to shift. So you're in the level of mind that's connected and feels boundless love and feels well-being and is also able to act from there.
Right. And so how long ago did you start teaching meditation yourself?
I mean, I've taught for about 25 years, started with Theravada, mindfulness insight meditation.
Right.
And then kind of my own thing, I was asked to teach by two very well-known teachers, one called Adi Ashanti, who's a West Coast teacher, a non-dual teacher, and then a Tibetan Buddhist teacher called Mingyur Rinpoche, who was the son of my original teacher.
Oh.
So they asked me about 10 years ago to start to teach on my own and encouraged me to do it. So I've gone from there.
And we're
invitation.
We're big supporters of the Theravadins as well as the Buddhists, because as many of you know, the founder of this radio station, Giorgio, became a Theravadin, a Buddhist monk. But we've had we're non-denominational. We have Buddhists of all nature on the show, and other people too. So I'm just curious. So over the years that you've been teaching people, would you say sort of your technique of teaching, have you been able to help people get to sort of that state quicker than in the past?
Yes. So the two things, as you mentioned before,
right.
Both quicker, mm-hmm. immediate shifts. Mm-hmm. So some ways what I call my practice is small glimpses many times during the day.
Oh, okay.
So rather than long teaching, and then the goal is small shifts and then to stabilize over time, as you said, that the brain then entrains or
right.
is able to actually... Right. Create the new normal.
Right. And those small shifts, how long you ask people to take to do those small shifts?
Well, so you shift. You can learn to shift in, 10 seconds to 3 minutes.
Okay.
And then it's about kind of just tuning in and then what I call marinating. So you just stay tuned in.
Right, and you learn
how to kind of almost like riding a bicycle.
Right.
You balance until you lose it, and then no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You just re-recognize.
I see. Yep. Cool. Okay. Time for us to take another commercial break. When we come back, I would like to ask you about your Awake Awareness Institute.
Okay.
Very curious about that. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at talkingalternative.com.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
With your money and your long fur coats, keys to your Mercedes Benz and your speedboats, climb on board. Heaven's waiting just for you. You sing hallelujah, praise the Lord. Looks like you're driving a great big Ford. Television, religion, been good to you. Oh, calm down, baby, you're too high. Baby, you're too high. Baby. Just look into my eyes, baby, on too high, yeah, yeah.
I love Jenny DeVoe, wonderful singer-songwriter I saw here in the city many years ago. Kept her CD around. Said, you know what? I gotta use one of her songs. She's got such a beautiful, not the most, you know, happy kind of songs usually, some kind of depressing, but beautiful, beautiful. I love her stuff. How did the Awake Awareness Institute come about?
About 10 years ago when I was asked to teach, I decided to make it a nonprofit. Create a nonprofit institution, mm-hmm. and started to offer teachings and also mm-hmm. do some research with the scientists and create a way of starting to test out some of these and get feedback from students, which is kind of the way that I teach. I've got, you know, I go inside and I play with these things myself, mm-hmm. but then I also say, how's this working? What are you noticing?
Right, and get someone else's perspective on it.
Yeah. So I thought that would be an institute, kind of a adult education approach rather than a guru approach.
Okay. And so this you hold classes with this institute?
Yes, that's right.
And how often do you do that?
So each year, each semester, I kind of do it differently. Sometimes I do a lot of intensives. I've done longer retreats. This fall, I'm doing, every other week, I'm doing an evening here in New York City at One Spirit.
One Spirit Alliance. Yeah, we know those guys. We love them. Cool. Yeah. And over the 10 years that you've run it, what have you learned?
Well, I've learned that...
running a nonprofit's not that easy, right?
Yeah, that running a nonprofit's not that easy. It's definitely nonprofit.
Yeah.
And that it's an act of love and an act of service. Right. And that it requires having people who have benefited kind of get involved and being part of it and giving back, you know, kind of what they've received. And that's kind of what's kept it going. As
so
a business.
I know I asked you before and you said, like people are more open to meditation.
Yes.
But have you found that, I guess, maybe as the collective consciousness is opening mm-hmm. up to meditation more, that just people in general are able to go deeper in their practice or get more benefits from the practice more quickly over the years?
I do. I think there's a opening of consciousness. I'm not sure what that's all about. You know, mm-hmm. I try not to make too much speculative or metaphysical postulations because everyone's got a different view, but I just focus on what is, and absolutely people are more available. Mm-hmm. And I think also a lot of the preliminary practices in most traditions are to learn to focus your intellectual mind and then mm-hmm. to be able to focus your attention. Mm-hmm. And most people are trained to do that in our Western educational system.
Yeah.
So they have the maturity of what often people are spending the first 20 years in the monastery doing, mm-hmm. then the question is, can they be given instructions to be able to kind of go to a level of ground of being to discover this natural wakefulness that's already here?
Mm. What do you think is the most important thing for someone to remember as they begin a meditation practice to help them to stay with it?
Yeah, this is always the dance back and forth is how do you, because the part of you that starts, the one that's I'm going to be better by meditating, often is like, oh, that's enough of that, you know. That voice
gets bored
is like,
real easy.
Yeah, gets bored and it's kind of going like, let's try something else now, you know. That's too hard.
Right.
So, it's almost got to be a heart's desire. And I find either people have come because they've hit bottom. Mm-hmm. And they really need to do it, mm-hmm. or they've had moments of tremendous relief and well-being and love mm-hmm. that they say, their heart says, that's what I want. If mm-hmm. that's possible, I want to live that way. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to put in the dedication and make it a priority in their life.
Right. Yeah. Do you see that there's kind of this blending of Eastern and Western ideals and philosophies mm-hmm. that as we become a more interconnected global society, that sort of these Eastern principles and ideas, especially around meditation, are really taking hold in the Western world?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think the mindfulness movement is is one of the leading places. I mean, it's on the cover of Time magazine, and they're doing mindfulness at Google. They even have a director of mindfulness.
Oh, really? They have a director of mindfulness? Yeah. Oh, cool. I got to get that guy on the show.
So certainly psychology and spirituality are coming together mm-hmm. to help people both wake up and grow up.
Right.
So that by the, we've seen, you know, some of the gurus who mm-hmm. end up acting out because they don't yeah. have psychological maturity.
Right.
And then we've seen a lot of people who try psychotherapy and only can get to a certain level, which is right. what I often right. find in my therapy practice, is a lot of people come to me who have reached success in most of their life.
Mm-hmm.
They say, I'm married, I'm successful, I just got a promotion, I'm the head of this company, you know, my I'm healthy, mm-hmm. and something's miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Is this all there is? There's not, I haven't found what I'm looking for, and I've even tried meditation, I go to church, I go to this, I do that, I do yoga, you know, and something's missing. And this is the essence of what I'm focusing on, is the simple principle of the ground of being, or the shift to an awareness based rather than a doing, finding being. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I often say to people, I try to remind them that we're human beings, not human doings, because we're so caught up in the doing.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't know if this is a landmark thing, but you know, a good friend of mine, you know, often talks about, you know, we have this sort of model in our mind that if we do the right things, then we'll have what we want and then we can be happy.
Right.
But the real model is you have to be happy, which then will cause you to do the right things and then you'll have what you want.
That's right. And that you have, exactly what you say is exactly what I've found to be true for me mm-hmm. is that you can be happy for no reason.
Right.
And that is actually not an
attitude. And that's a huge insight.
It's a huge insight. And it's actually a huge natural level of our consciousness.
Right.
So it's not a belief, it's not a thought, it's not an attitude. It's actually to be able to shift and feel that is true rather than believing someone else or that's what the whole meditation is about.
Right. Yeah, as Abraham likes to describe it, it's like we're all this cork that we have to actively hold it on like the bottom of the tub.
Okay. Yeah,
and if we just let go, it'll naturally rise to the top, which is happiness.
That's right.
And that's the natural direction for us. I know you said you don't like to speculate, but I'm going to ask you to speculate anyway.
Okay.
I mean, if you were to project into the future 10, 20, 30 years, where do you see just meditation in general? Do you think it's going to be like so integrated into society that people won't even understand how we never did it? Or will it still be sort of the small movement trying to gain ground? How would you see
it? Yes. I think the mindfulness-based kind of meditation will become integrated into business and medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to come through that door mm-hmm. and that wellness programs, and people are going to see the statistics are out there. There's the studies are in, there's no doubt it helps with stress and medical conditions, high blood pressure. The list goes on.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Because it helps with stress, and they've identified something like 70% of all major diseases are all like the major component of them. It comes from stress.
That's right. And this is one of the simplest and best ways that takes the least amount of time that in conjunction with, you know, exercise and food and other
And it doesn't cost you anything.
It doesn't cost you anything.
You know, you just sit there. You don't do anything.
That's right.
It's the easiest thing in the world to do. Yeah. Well, maybe not the easiest, but close.
And then, so that's the first level of meditation. Now, the next level is one I'm interested in, which is this shift into what we just talked about as this ground of being or this well-being. That, I hope, will piggyback on the first.
Mm.
That's kind of what I'm hoping. So I've created this language like effortless mindfulness, which is not that the mindfulness takes no effort, but what you do is you shift into an awareness that's already effortlessly aware and do mindfulness from there.
Ah, okay.
And then by shifting into that effortlessly aware sense of yourself, you realize all is well. And that and that from there, you have this impulse to create and to relate. And that is, I think, a way that we can all access.
Beautiful.
And, yeah.
Beautiful. I look forward to it. And I know you're working on a book.
Yeah.
Do you have a title yet? Or
yes,
a working
I do.
Title?
So it's a book with Sounds True, and it's called Shift into Freedom.
Shift into Freedom.
The Science and Practice of Open-Hearted Awareness.
Oh, I like that. I like open-hearted stuff. Cool. And if people want to learn more about you and learn about the Institute, where can they go to find more?
So I have a website, which can be found through my name, which is spelled L-O-C-H. Mm-hmm. This is my first name, Locke, and then K-E-L-L-Y. So
no relation to Loch Ness Monster.
yes, a little bit.
A little bit, oh.
So
okay, so Locke Kelly, L-O-C-H-K-E-L-L-Y
.org.
Org, O-R-G, yep. Yes, because you're a nonprofit, so
yes,
you're an organization.
That's right.
Cool, And you do regular classes and stuff here in the city in New York?
Yeah, so I have one about every other week for this fall. So October 8th at One Spirit, and you can find the schedule on my website.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming to the studio today, Locke. It was a real pleasure. Glad
Great to meet you,
you were
Sam.
Able to fill in Jason's shoes, who bowed out at the last minute.
Okay, thank you.
But the show's not over yet. I know you guys are thinking, wait a minute, Sam sounds like he's signing off, but we're only about 45 minutes through. Yes, because we're going to be bringing on another special guest just for our last segment to help introduce you to one of our new shows. And we're going to talk to, after the break, our 21st century entrepreneur, J.C. Maldonado, talking about his new show. So everybody, please stay tuned. We'll be back right after this break.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Have you ever decided to reinvent yourself? Are you navigating a new life's journey? Are you an aspiring artist that's looking for direction? This is Kevin Barbaro, and my new show, Coffee Talk 3.0, is your new best friend. Tune in live to hear successful professional artists and their inspiring real-life adventures Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at TalkingAlternative.com.
Bonjour, this is Dominique de Kock.
Bonjour, c'est Tamara Zuboff.
Bonjour, c'est Asania Kone.
We are hosting Pardon My French, New York City.
Our guests come from all over the world.
From Mali to New Caledonia, from Paris to Quebec.
French is their common language, yet they all come from different cultures, backgrounds, or countries.
And their common desire is to make New York their home.
Listen to them share their stories.
Join us at Pardon My French, New York City every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Joan Osborne, When God Was One of Us. I just felt like that was a good one for end up the segment with Locke. So it's my pleasure now to introduce you all before his premiere in just a few minutes, J.C. Maldonado, who is definitely a modern day entrepreneur. I've met JC probably a year and a half ago, maybe.
Like 2 years ago.
Like 2 years ago through a business networking group. And JC has a company called
BizGrow Partners.
BizGrow Partners, which does a joint venture and business development for companies. And, you know, we've been talking about the idea of doing a show a very business focused show, trying to help entrepreneurs because there's so much to know today, things changing so much, to really help entrepreneurs to really grow their business, understand the changing landscape, and really give them insights from other successful entrepreneurs. Tell me, JC, when you were a kid, were you like the guy on the corner with the lemonade stand, like charging more than the other kids and making more money?
Actually, no.
No? Oh, okay.
My brother and I, we don't really have a business background growing up.
Oh, no, not at all.
My father was a retired police officer.
Oh.
My mother was a homemaker in the traditional sense. And later on, she became a preschool teacher.
Okay.
So we didn't really have anything in our background that would suggest that we would go on and start different businesses.
At what point did you kind of catch that bug? I mean, it had to happen sometime in life.
Probably while I was in college. I went to this... I remember this seminar of a network marketing company, and they were selling knives of all products.
The Ginsu knives.
Yeah. And I go to this event, and they're selling knives, and the knives look like it was a good product. It was one of those products that would cut the food, and it would just
keep going.
It'd be really smooth. And I looked at the product, and then I went home, and I tried to sell the product to my parents, and then, of course, they shut me down. I said,
oops.
What the heck are you doing? You're trying to sell knives.
Right.
So that's kind of how the bug started. And then later on in my college career, I came across another network marketing company that was kind of financial services based. And I gave that a try, and I actually made a bunch of sales within that organization. And I just had kind of like a knack for it. And at that point, I kind of realized that business was the direction I was going to go in.
Yeah, kind of like you. I mean, I grew up, my father was a statistician, my mom was a school teacher, so I really didn't have that kind of entrepreneurial thing in my household, but somehow it got into me because when I was like in junior high school, I used to go around with a friend selling like the Saturday evening paper. Like, you know, when it first came out, we'd go to the trucks that was delivering it to like all the little local delis, and we'd buy a bunch, and we'd walk around to all the bars in the neighborhood because it was a very Irish neighborhood, so there was tons of bars, and we'd sell it, and when like it was a quarter at the time, and we'd sell it for like 50 cents, and you know, on a good night we can make like $50 in like a couple of hours, because you know, especially wintertime when it's cold and people don't want to go out, and they'd give you a little bit of a tip. So I used to say I started being an entrepreneur in 1993, but then when I remembered that, I was like, well, actually, I've been an entrepreneur since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
So, but you ended up getting actually a JD. You actually went more towards law.
Yes.
How come you didn't end up going practicing law?
Well, while I was in law school, I had envisioned of starting my own practice coming out of law school.
Right.
And I wanted to mergers and acquisitions was always a topic that fascinated me.
Okay.
So that's what I was conceptualizing in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Until one day I read this newsletter publication. Mm-hmm. I even forgot what the company's name is. They might even still be around. I'm not sure. But it was this publication that kind of put out material on how to start your own business. There was this newsletter, and there was one particular article that was addressing the an opportunity that a business could take advantage of, or an aspiring entrepreneur could take advantage of, which is helping business owners buy and sell businesses.
Oh, being a business broker.
Yeah. And basically what the article stated is that in most of the states in the United States, you don't need a license to actually get started. So it attracted me because from the standpoint of starting my own legal practice, I would, you know, obviously, I have to continue finish law school, which I did. I actually finished law school, then take the bar, then actually go and get clients without any experience doing the legal work.
Right.
So that wasn't that attractive, and I just wasn't that patient. So I decided to kind of go the route of becoming a business broker and a mergers and acquisitions consultant. And that's how I got started in business.
Oh, okay. And actually, like, if you did take the bar and become a full lawyer, like, there are certain limitations on, like, how you can be involved with businesses and the transactions, right? And
What I didn't like about the legal business was a couple of things. One, I didn't like the restrictions on solicitation and marketing. And solicitation and marketing has always been a discipline that I was very interested in. So I didn't like the limits and the constraints with regard to that. Also, I didn't like the fact that the major assets of any law practice was people. So that was the actual assets in
right,
itself.
Right.
Where there are other businesses where that's not the case.
Right.
So,
it could be, you know, what you're producing. Yeah. It could be all kinds of things.
Finally, I didn't like the concept of making money on your time. That, you know, the whole concept of charging an hour per, you know, a rate per hour seemed
right.
limiting to me. So I like the idea of making, you know, large commissions and maybe potentially taking ownership in companies and
right.
you know, raising money, and also be on the front end of negotiations and deal making and working with people. I always consider myself a people person, so so the legal profession struck me as a business that where, you know, you're kind of behind a desk.
Right. So how many years ago did you actually start your own business?
End of 2000, going into 2001.
Okay, so it's been like 14 years that you've been in business.
Yes.
What's been your biggest challenge over those years?
Just not knowing anything, getting started. You know, your first, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, you know, since there was nothing in my background that, that, you know, that would have given me an edge, I had to spend that time learning, you know. And that's one of the motivations for this show.
Right, to help give people that information. What do you see as being sort of the biggest challenge that entrepreneurs face today?
Lack of skill sets.
Oh, really?
In the various disciplines that are needed to actually start
and run a business.
Mm-hmm. You know, also, lack of having a concept of team, lack of leadership, and not studying
together.
Leadership
as
a principle, as a discipline.
Gotcha. And over the last 13, 14 years, do you think that the landscape of business has changed a little bit, a lot, or something in between?
I think the fundamentals are still the same.
Yeah.
It's still all about sales and marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Operations, which is really aimed towards keeping the customer happy and delivering the service or the product, and managing money.
Yeah.
I think the tools that are now available for an owner to achieve that and to build a business have changed. And it's actually to one's advantage now. I think it's a little easier.
It's actually easier, right?
I mean, think.
You know, people, I've seen people like create businesses, like very successful businesses, like out of their bedroom, you know, just on the computer, online, and being able to do stuff. Technology has been that great equalizer.
Although what's very interesting is that recently there's been a survey that about maybe 75% of business owners actually think it's harder to build a business in today's environment than it was like 30 years ago.
Wow,
so,
that's interesting.
So even though, you know, my perspective is that it's easier today, most people think it's harder. So
great. Well, we're very happy to have you join the network.
Thank you.
And immediately following the Conscious Consultant Hour, every Friday at 12 noon will be...
JC Maldonado.
On his show...
The 21st Century Entrepreneur.
So please stay tuned. You're going to hear the premiere of JC's show right after we finish up here. And you have a guest today?
Yes. We have a very interesting guest, a gentleman by the name of Lani Shambi, who is really an experienced entrepreneur, 30 years plus experience owning
wonderful.
Businesses, running businesses, selling businesses, advising business owners. So
great,
very interesting guest.
Really good guy. And your topic is going to be?
The topic is going to be business partnerships.
Partnerships.
How to utilize business partnerships as a methodology of growing your business.
Wonderful, wonderful. And you have a partner, don't you?
Yes, I have several partners.
Several partners, yes. Partners are a great thing. I mean, that, and I even wrote in the newsletter, you know, partnerships, they are a tremendous risk. Because I know many people, myself included, has had many partnerships in the past and caused all kinds of trouble, but they're also the greatest asset, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've had some partnerships that have worked out very well, and then we've had some partnerships that have not worked out very well.
Right.
So, you know, there's been both success and failure from our experience the last 14 years. And
wonderful.
We look forward to sharing that.
Great. I look forward to hearing it. So, everybody, please stay tuned. You're going to hear JC starting off with the premiere of his show, The 21st Century Entrepreneur, right after us. Thank you for listening, and we will be back next week.
Gonna be alright.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Have you ever decided to reinvent yourself? Are you navigating a new life's journey? Are you an aspiring artist that's looking for direction? This is Kevin Barbaro, and my new show, Coffee Talk 3.0, is your new best friend. Tune in live to hear successful professional artists and their inspiring real-life adventures Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.